We still pray for them. We have our very country. It's we were established through a what? A war for? Isn't that great? Now, I enjoy the freedoms of America, some of the freedoms we have. We don't have as many as we think we have. Our brothers in China sent me an email. They said, "White, you start preaching the real gospel and you'll be all kinds of trouble with the government and everybody else, including the Christians. You guys aren't preaching the real gospel over there. You just start preaching the gospel. Love your enemy. Give your stuff away. Empty your bank accounts. Help the poor, the blind, the widows, the orphans, the prisoners. You have all kinds of opposition right now. Because they see us. They see us, you know, they see us in the fishbowl and they say, what are you guys doing over there? But we can change that. That's the good news. So be encouraged. We can change all. We really can. With God's help, is anything too impossible for God? No, absolutely not. The war for independence. And what comes into the church? Dominion theology. We're going to take over. I was in the airport, and there's this book this Jewish gal just wrote out. She's a pagan. It's called Kingdom Coming. It details the rise of the dominion theology, and the Christians are going to take over. It bless their hearts. You know, Pat Robinson and Falwell and all these guys, and some of you may believe that and whatever. Jesus said, if my kingdom was of this world, my servants would what? Fight. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this world. He said that to Pilate. I mean, at any time he was going to say anything to anybody, a Roman official, to evangelize them and tell them the way it is. You know, Paul said, he said in Romans 11, before he goes to 12, he says, love your enemies, right? He said, pour heaping coals on their head. And then he goes in and talks about 13, about establishing the governments. The Christians go to Romans 13, this is 13, yeah, 13, so it's the end of Romans 12, and they talk about, well, we need to do this with the government. Well, God puts those people in and does that. We're supposed to love our enemies. Lest you think I'm crazy with all these strange bedfellows, but you ought to see what the unbelievers think about the strange bedfellows with Christian politics and what Jesus said. The guy in Albuquerque, I listened to him for an hour. He knows all about that stuff. He quoted to me, and I said, you're right, it's worse than that, let me tell you. He said, really? I said, absolutely. I said, Lanny, can you imagine, the elections are coming up, right? Can you imagine Jesus' platform for office? Vote for me. What's your platform? Love your enemies. Luke 6, I said, lend your money to your enemies and don't expect it back. Is that far out? Can you imagine George Bush saying, we got to empty some of the treasury. I'm going to empty all my I'm going to sell my ranch in Colorado because I'm going to give the money to Gaddafi there over in. See how strange that is? How upside down things are? Jesus would say, love your enemies, so none of you can be my disciples that doesn't give up all his possessions, you know. I mean, we rest our case. How many of us would vote for somebody like that? Something to think about. Something to think about. So I'm sure by now I've offended everybody in here. it's a challenge. Okay, so that's the deal here. So let's move quickly. The sixth heresy is just a quick one. I think it's, and this happens a lot in Christian circles, it's circle the wagons. It's a big bad world out there, you know, so therefore we're fiercely independent. We're not going to engage the world. We're going to protect our children forevermore. And there is some protection, but what they do is they turn inward. They don't outreach. They don't give, you know, they just become an island unto themselves. I call that circling the wagons. It happens all the time. I was in a group once that I started to see that. I said, we can't do this anymore. You know, you're right, but Jesus is big. He can help us out of that. And then what we have is we sort of have a family idolatry. We're involved with old bloodlines versus the new bloodlines, which is our brothers and sisters, which, you know, we have to go in and engage the culture. Oh, I'm sorry. Number five was the independence and control. Yeah, independence and control. And those two are under the second challenge. I'd say independence, control, and circle the wagons is under the fierce independent spirit. Okay. And when you circle the wagons, you have a lack of basic things. You have a lack of outreach, a lack of evangelism. You know, the whole thing becomes inward. I call it Dead Sea Christianity, always flowing in and never flowing out. Okay, the third challenge. Here we go, the love of money. Of course, we could we could spend about 5 days on this. But anyway, it's a spirit of mammon. It's a distraction. It works very harmoniously with the fierce independent spirit. Before the New Age came in, those other two still worked in harmony, the fierce independent spirit. If you track history, we had the love of money and the fierce independent spirit. Then a new age crept in and sort of came to the top, bubbled up. You could see it happen in history. as the Eastern religions came and started to infest us, as we became more affluent. The New Age came as a result of our affluence, I believe. So, love of money. Here's the seventh heresy. Treasure up here on earth. Very simple. If you look at any Christian ministries, what do they teach us to do? Get ready for retirement, right? You really deserve the best, and what did Jesus say? Do not treasure up. And then he says something really bizarre later on in those famous chapters. Give us this day our daily bread. I don't understand what that means. We try to do things in our life to try to obey that and whatever, but the more we do and we're sacrificial, the more his grace is manifest and people look at us like, why are you doing that? I mean, we did something very, I mean, I'm not bragging, just as an example. I just try to give you examples. We had this single mom and her parents, a single mom and two kids. We sent it out in our newsletter. They had been abandoned by their church because they wouldn't support them. They were really desperate. They wanted to work, they had health problems, and they needed like $2,000 to move into her aunt's house in Kansas City from Orlando. And nobody would help them. I mean, so we said, okay, fine, what do we got? Well, we got some in the ministry account, our account. We just prayed about it, met them, talked to them, make sure we're not, and we said, sure. And so we gave them the money, and then we put an appeal out. We got another $1,500 from all over the world. We got money from people we never even talked to before. God bless you. Wonderful work. I'm thinking, is that wonderful? I mean, shouldn't we all be doing that when God places a need in front of us? I mean, if you have, there's guys I know that I work with make $1 million a year, and some of the Christians I know, they have millions of dollars saved up, and I don't think they believe that parable. It says the rich fool says, tonight your life will be required of you, and God will say, you fool. Now I stopped preaching going to meddling, haven't I? I'm sorry. But I'm telling you, all these financial planning groups and all that, they all are involved in this. And meanwhile, we get emails through from there's Christian brothers in Pakistan or their children are being stolen away from their... I mean, what if somebody stole your kid and you needed $3,000 to buy him back and didn't have the money? Would you want somebody else to drain their bank account and pay? We bought 10 of these boys back, and they videotaped the reunion with their parents. I can give you the website to go look at it. How can we store all this up? Well, we got to be responsible. Yes, but... God said, John the Baptist said, be content with your wages. If you have two sets of clothes, give one away. What? Give one away? Five of the seven things he talked about dealt with money in that little soliloquy in the Gospels. So it's an absolutely big thing. Who made the hit parade for God? The widow and her mite, right? In that scripture, he talks about, I think the Greek word talks about he was scrutinizing the rich. They had these urns, these big urns, and they were probably throwing stuff in there, rattling around, making a lot of noise. It's like people have building campaigns, and they put their name on the, they have the reward. So silly. We've been tricked. We shouldn't put it in the buildings anyway, but I mean by and large, but we should give it to people. Those are the only things that are going to enter into heaven, those things. The widow and her mite, he said, she put in more than what? All of them, because she gave out of her poverty. Paul's admonition to the Corinthians, again, who weren't saving up for the famine, remember, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, but not by way of compulsion and all that, but he said, and then he gets real, he said, I don't want you to be shamed when I show up and collect this stuff. Remember the collection you started last year, you guys, and read it. You can see the sarcasm going through it. He's saying, get ready, because we're coming, and we don't want to shame you for your covetousness. And I believe, I asked the Lord, is there, and I believe there is a phrase, God counts what we keep, not what we give.